Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I am John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Wednesday, October 26, 2016. The UN Refugee Agency says 500,000 South Sudanese are seeking asylum in Uganda.
This is a crisis that doesn't look like going away anytime soon, and we're currently receiving between 2,000 to 3,000 per day. From what we hear from the new arrivals, there's thousands more set to follow in the days, weeks, and potentially even months ahead.
And Japanese peacekeepers will stay longer in South Sudan to help protect civilians.
Japan wants peace and security ensured in this country. We hope Japan will continue to advance peace in this country.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The Kiir administration is considering increasing the number of states yet again. Last year, President Salva Kiir doubled the number from 10 to 28, a move that angered the armed opposition. Some say the country cannot afford more changes. VOA's Jill Craig has the story from Nairobi.
South Sudan's presidential spokesman, Atenny Wek Atenny, says that a committee led by First Vice President Taban Dengai was formed last week to determine whether South Sudan should add three or four more states to its current 28. Atenny says the people, not President Salva Kiir, are asking for the new states because different ethnic groups have been contesting certain areas.
In South Sudan, the creation of 28 states has brought jubilations and brought many people, not less than, more than 80% of the people of South Sudan, has appreciated the fact that the states were increased to 28.
But many disagree with Atenny's assessment, saying when Kiir took the unilateral move of increasing the number of states from 10 to 28 last year, he angered many, including opposition leader Riek Machar, who wanted 21 states. And Cirino Hiteng, former deputy foreign minister of South Sudan, does not believe that another increase of states is going to solve the country's problems, which include an ongoing conflict that has killed tens of thousands since it started in December 2013, in addition to a more than 600% inflation rate during the past year.
Even adjusting state boundaries, even increasing or reducing the states, cannot solve the current crisis in South Sudan, because it is more about political power now.
University of Pretoria law professor and South Sudanese expatriate Remember Mia Mingi says Kiir's move will increase conflict in the country. He argues that Kiir wants to increase the states in order to buy loyalty and support from those who will benefit from the corresponding new political jobs, albeit in a time of financial crisis.
So it is a job creation that then has resource implications. And the little resource that we have, as you know, the government basically does not have the resource to finance the budget of this year. And so to now create additional structures that demand money is certainly being quite unrealistic. And it is using in an unfortunate way public funding for personal and political reasons. And that is basically an abuse of his office.
Atenny disagrees with the idea that the president has sinister motivations behind the pending decision.
But these are administrative units that are to be created within the sitting government. There's no reason why it is to be taken negatively.
Kiir said last year that he acted within his mandate by increasing the number of states to 28. But Mia Mingi argues the president does not have the constitutional power of altering the boundaries of the state. He also says there are two active cases in the Supreme Court of South Sudan that are challenging Kiir's 2015 decision.
The case is still active in court. And as a result, the president cannot even at the moment, until that case is decided, contemplate in the remotest sense an initiative to create new states.
Atenny says that the committee is looking at whether to create one new state in Barlgazal, two in Upper Nile, and possibly one in Equatoria. He says President Kiir will then take the recommendations of the committee and make his decision. Jill Craig, VOA News, Nairobi.
Senior police officers from South Sudan and Uganda agreed to work together to end rampant insecurity along the Juba Nimule Road. Police chiefs from the two countries met in Kampala over the weekend to decide how to provide security and end the cycle of violent attacks on buses and other vehicles carrying civilians along the road. Waki Simon Wudu reports for VOA from Nairobi.
The officials issued a joint communique in which they agreed to speed up an extradition treaty between Kampala and Juba following their meeting last week. South Sudan's Inspector General of Police, General Makur Marol Aduot, and his Ugandan counterpart, General Kale Kaihura, agreed on numerous resolutions aimed at improving security along the two countries' borders. South Sudan Police spokesperson Brigadier Achor Daniel Justin says the countries want to beef up security along the Juba Nimule Kampala and the Juba Yei Oraba Kampala Road, two highways South Sudan heavily relies on for its imports from East Africa.
How to secure these two-way roads? We have our police, highway police, and then they have theirs.
According to the joint communique, the police chiefs agreed to establish task teams that will work to dismantle criminal gangs and develop a watch list of suspected criminals.
The two leadership decided to seek the quick solutions to it.
In recent months, unknown gunmen have killed several civilians on buses and other vehicles traveling along the Juba-Nimule-Kampala highway. South Sudanese have differing opinions on that count. Juba resident Akwach Ajang welcomes the move by South Sudanese and Ugandan authorities to work together because he says the highway attacks are out of control.
If the army cannot secure it, could the police with the light weapon could secure the entire road? My advice to our government and to our sisters and brothers who have taken arms as the state, they must dialogue, they must negotiate.
Ajang says citizens must play a role in securing the highways heading into and out of South Sudan.
We should denounce violence and promote a culture of peace. Otherwise, killing ourselves is not going to help the people of South Sudan. And we should solve all the issues, grievances, demands through dialogue.
Juba resident Zainab Yassin agrees, adding the decision by the two police chiefs will not end widespread insecurity along the two highways in South Sudan.
These people, they are there on the road making this incident, but they are not living in the road. They are living somewhere else. They're supposed to go and live what they need exactly. What is their problem? They're supposed to go and ask for that one, for us to have the solution for the problem.
The Juba Nimule Kampala and Juba Yei Oraba Kampala roads highways remain the two major roads used by traders to reach South Sudan from Uganda and other parts of East Africa. For VOA News, I am Wake Simon Wudu in Nairobi.
South Sudan's ongoing violence continues to drive thousands of refugees across the border into Uganda on a daily basis. The Office of the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees in Uganda says the number of South Sudanese refugees in the country has risen to more than 500,000 in the last couple of months. UNHCR officials say the huge number of refugees is straining already scarce resources and forcing the agency to cut food rations in half. Simon Peter Apiku reports for VOA from the Ugandan capital, Kampala.
The UNHCR spokesperson in Uganda, Charles Yaxley, says at least 2,000 South Sudanese stream into their country each day.
This is a crisis that doesn't look like going away anytime soon. And we're currently receiving between 2,000 to 3,000 per day. From what we hear from the new arrivals, there's thousands more set to follow in the days, weeks, and potentially even months ahead.
Some 250,000 South Sudanese have been settled in Uganda since July, following renewed fighting between the South Sudan Army and troops loyal to former First Vice President Riek Machar. The violence that broke out in July in Juba left hundreds of people dead and forced hundreds of thousands to flee to neighboring countries. Yaxley says the recent influx has pushed the number of South Sudanese refugees in Uganda to 500,000.
In the first 6 months of 2016, Uganda received just 35,000 refugees. So, this has been a huge surge in new arrivals.
Yaxley says the influx of refugees to Uganda has stretched UNHCR very thin.
UNHCR and our partners, we need around $250 million for 2016 alone. Now, currently, we've received just 30% of that.
South Sudanese refugees here in Uganda reside in 10 districts, including the national capital, Kampala. The government and UNHCR recently opened the Bidibidi settlement in Yumbe to accommodate new arrivals. Yaxley says he found their stories extremely disturbing.
I was in Bidibidi myself last week, and I spoke with some of the new arrivals, particularly those that are fleeing from the central Equatoria region. And every single one of them have incredibly traumatic stories to tell. They told me stories of armed groups coming and attacking their villages in the night, burning down houses, sexually assaulting women and young girls, kidnapping young men and boys and forcing them to be recruited into their ranks. Almost everyone I spoke to had seen a friend, if not a family member, attacked or if not killed.
Last month, the UN said the number of South Sudanese refugees sheltering in neighboring countries had surpassed the 1 million mark. For VOA News, I'm Simon Peter Apiku in Kampala.
Japanese lawmakers yesterday extended the mandate of the Japanese peacekeepers to serve in the United Nations mission in South Sudan. The 400-strong Japanese contingent, composed of mainly engineers, was due to leave the country next month. The Japanese ambassador to South Sudan says his government now wants the contingent to serve until March next year. Tito Justin reports for VOA from Juba.
Japan has 400 soldiers who are part of the engineering unit of the United Nations mission in South Sudan, or ANMIS. The Japanese ambassador to South Sudan, Kia Masahiko, says his government wants South Sudan to work with the peacekeepers trying to restore peace across the country. He says the warring parties should honor their commitment to resolve the conflict in South Sudan.
We are hoping that the government would cooperate with the international community and implement the agreement.
The Japanese envoy says his country welcomes the planned deployment of a 4,000-strong regional protection force with a mandate to protect civilians, aid workers, and important installations in South Sudan, including Juba International Airport. Masahiko says the protection force will enhance security throughout the country.
Japan wants peace and security ensured in this country. We hope Japan will continue to advance peace in this country.
In the past, Japan's anti-war constitution only authorized its peacekeepers to use weapons during missions such as UN peacekeeping operations to protect UN staff and others under the supervision of the Japanese National Army, known as the Self-Defense Force. But according to the Japan Times, a new security law took effect in March that allows Japanese peacekeepers to use weapons to fight anyone obstructing their mission. Under the new law, Tokyo is considering giving its army expanded and possible riskier missions to undertake as UN peacekeeping in volatile areas. Japanese Defense Minister Tomomi Inadi arrived in South Sudan 2 weeks ago to assess whether Japanese self-defense forces deployed here are ready to be engaged in new missions. Ambassador Masahiko is urging different ethnic communities across South Sudan to not engage in revenge killings or hate speeches and instead focus on reconciliation. For VOA News, I am Tito Justin in Juba.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, former South Sudan rebels free children. That story is coming up next.
For in-depth news and analysis on events in South Sudan, tune in to South Sudan in Focus, Monday through Friday from 1630 to 1700 UTC. We are also on the web at www.voanews.com/South Sudan or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on VOA Africa.
What do you think? will speak out on important questions. The question today:
are you optimistic about Africa becoming more prosperous in the future? Why or why not?
Why not? We will. We've seen a lot of changes, as in modernity, technologies around, everything is changing. Of course we will.
As an African, we are very much confident and we develop ourselves. We can become very prosperous because lots of the resources here are not fully developed yet, like natural resources. So if we're able to focus and develop those things, then we can also go to the top.
I'm optimistic about the prosperity of Africa because I'm an African. So if Africa is not prosperous, in other ways, I'm the one who suffers. I would wish to live in Africa where things are good, employment.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. UNICEF says more than 100 child soldiers were freed by armed groups in South Sudan today. Other armed opposition groups continue to wage war against the government of South Sudan, and UNICEF fears that the recruitment of children could rise even as aid workers work to rescue more children. For VOA News, Ayen Bior has more from Washington.
The United Nations Children's Emergency Relief Agency says it's the largest number of freed children since last year. UNICEF says 145 child soldiers were released today in Boma State's Pabor town. They will be placed in an interim care center until their families can be found. Today's release represents a small fraction of the more than 16,000 children who have been recruited to fight in South Sudan's ongoing conflicts. But Vedasto Nzanzu Gwanko, UNICEF's chief of child protection in South Sudan, says it offers a glimmer of hope.
These 145 children, they are children who remained in Cobra faction when 1,755 children were released last year. So we continue discussing with Cobra faction, which is its opposition group, to make sure that all children who are still in their ranks are released.
Over 1,700 children were released in the Greater Pabor administrative area last year, a major step toward freeing the thousands of children who have been fighting in South Sudan's conflict. Nzanzu Gwanko admits the goal of freeing all child soldiers is a difficult task. More than 800 children are estimated to have been recruited this year alone. He says, unfortunately, the demand for fighters continues to grow.
After the war started in 2013, we have seen massive recruitment. And in our report, monitoring and reporting mechanism, it has shown that since 2013, over 16,000 children have been recruited in South Sudan, which is very unfortunate. So I would agree that there's a lot of recruitment. Different faction armed groups, they are beefing up their human resources. And while we are continuing advocating for their release, we see that the communities are reporting children being recruited.
Nzanzu Gwanko says the freed children, who are 14 to 17 years old, are able to interact with aid workers and officials who are working to reintegrate them into society. But he says working for an armed group at an early age has taken a physical and mental toll on them. He says the children will receive counseling and psychosocial support in the coming months.
If you look at the children, for sure they seem to be affected psychologically. And during reintegration program, one first action from social workers would be to assess and profile them and look at how they have been affected and provide them with psychosocial support. Then they'll be able to join education, to join school, those who are eligible to go back to school, and others will be going to vocational training and other livelihood programs.
UNICEF says they continue to receive reports of child recruitment in Unity, Jonglei, and other states by both government and opposition forces, despite their ongoing work with the government's National Disarmament, Demobilization, and Reintegration Commission, and despite a signed commitment by both the South Sudan Army and the SPLM in opposition not to recruit children into their ranks. Ayen Bior, VOA News, Washington.
The Darfur Women's Action Group and the Washington-based university organized a four-day symposium to discuss the plight of women caught up in the middle of the Darfur conflict. After 15 years of war in Darfur, hundreds of women and girls have been used as weapons of war by both the government and various rebel groups in the country. Nadia Taha has this report from Washington.
The UN Special Representative of Secretary General on Sexual Violence, Zainab Hawa Bangura, told participants gathered at the meeting organized by George Mission University School of Conflict Analysis and Resolution that her office is working with Sudanese authorities to prevent crimes against women in Sudan.
My office has been trying to engage with Sudanese authorities to improve efforts to prevent such crimes. This has not been successful. In other countries, when crimes of sexual violence in conflict occur, we try to engage with the authorities, regional and international stakeholders to improve prevention efforts. We work to improve how the crimes are documented. We also work to train military prosecutors and police officers to investigate and prosecute cases. We have not been able to accomplish this in Darfur.
Bangura says much more must be done to stop conflict-related sexual violence in Darfur.
We must ensure that there is full accountability for sexual violence crimes, that victims of sexual violence have unimpeded access to services, and that the Sudanese authorities commit to a structured framework to comprehensively address the issue of conflict-related sexual violence. We know what has to be done. For years, we have been asking for action to be taken in Darfur. The slow pace of progress has been frustrating, but we all have a responsibility to continue to push for change. We must stand shoulder to shoulder with survivors, just as you are doing here today.
Daniel Rothbard is a professor of conflict analysis and resolution at George Mason University. He says the Darfur conflict is complex.
We have had conflict resolution meetings where we bring representatives from the militant groups together. We've had meetings where we bring the militants with civil society together to address the wide range of problems. And what we have found is in Darfur, it's not just one conflict between two parties. It's really multiple conflicts at different layers and sectors of society. And tragically, of course, the civilians are the largest group who suffer in terms of the scale of violence and women and children in particular.
Roosevelt says it is clear that the Sudan government is not committed to ending the violence in Darfur.
And also, as we heard at this conference today, the voices of the civilians, of the people who are suffering, they have to be heard and taken very seriously. It's well known that, of course, women who are subjected to sexual violence at a horrific scale, their voices need to be heard and their wisdom needs to be recognized by political leaders, not just leaders of the government, but by leaders also of the resistance movements.
Fatima Haroun, the vice president of Darfur Women's Action Group, says all Darfur activists have to work together with the international community to bring peace in Darfur.
Change will not come unless we hold the criminal accountable. We have to work with the international community to bring peace and justice in Sudan as general. And then after that, we as Sudanese people have to communicate. Communication is a key. Together and mobilize ourselves and listen to each other. Unite and unify our goal. Change will happen.
The recommendations from this week's symposium, which ended on Monday, will be sent to U.S. members of Congress and Canada's members of Parliament. For VOA News, I'm Nadia Taha in Washington.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here is a recap of today's top stories with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Damme.
Thanks, John. South Sudan's government may up the number of states once again. Last year, President Kiir expanded the number of states from 10 to 28, angering the armed opposition. Others in the international community called it a violation of the peace deal. Presidential spokesman Atene Wekatene says a committee led by First Vice President Taban Dengai was formed last week to determine whether South Sudan should add three or four more states to its current 28. Atene insists the people, not President Kiir, want the new states because different ethnic groups oppose certain areas. He says that 80% of the people fully agree with the higher number, but many disagree with Atene's assessment, saying when Mr. Kiir unilaterally increased the number to 28 late last year, he angered many, including opposition leader Riek Machar. Cyrano Heteng, former deputy foreign minister of South Sudan, doesn't believe more states is going to solve the country's problems, which include the conflict that's killed tens of thousands of people and caused an inflation rate of more than 600% over the past year. Top police authorities from South Sudan and Uganda say they will form a joint task force to end rampant insecurity along the Juba-Nimule Road. Police chiefs from the two countries met in Kampala over the weekend to strategize over how to provide security and end the wave of violent attacks on buses and other vehicles on the main road from Uganda. South Sudan's Inspector General of Police, General Makur Marol Adut, and his Ugandan counterpart agreed on numerous resolutions aimed at improving security along the two countries' borders. South Sudan's police spokesperson says they're looking to beef up security along the Juba-Nimule-Kampala Road and the Juba-Ye-Oraba-Kampala Road in particular. According to the joint communique, the chiefs agreed to establish task teams that will work to dismantle terror cells and criminal gangs. And finally, Japanese lawmakers yesterday extended the mandate of Japanese peacekeepers who serve in the United Nations mission in South Sudan. The 400-strong Japanese contingent composed of mainly engineers was due to leave the country next month. The Japanese ambassador to South Sudan says his government now wants the contingent to serve until March of next year. Japan has 400 soldiers who are part of the engineering unit of the United Nations mission in South Sudan, or UNMISS. The Japanese ambassador to South Sudan says his government wants South Sudan to work with peacekeepers trying to restore peace across the country. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Damme.
That's our show for this Wednesday. We now leave you with a song from Darfur by Abdelmajid Kureib. We You've been listening to Abdelmajid Kureiba singing about Darfur. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for being my guest tonight. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.